Chantar Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents On Assimilation, A Ranger's Return from War by Leo Jenkins. Narrated by Corey M. Snow. I should not obtrude my affairs so much on the notice of my readers if very particular inquiries had not been made by my townsmen concerning my mode of life, which some would call impertinent, though they do not appear to me at all impertinent, but, considering the circumstances, very natural and pertinent. I should not talk so much about myself if there were anybody else whom I knew as well. Unfortunately, I am confined to this theme by the narrowness of my experience. As for the rest of my readers, they will accept such portions as apply to them. Henry David Thoreau. Foreword. I remember sitting on my couch in central New York, still on active duty with the Army, discussing a possible separation from the military with my wife. We talked about where we would move if I got out and what we would do for work. We both liked the idea of Colorado, so I began to do some research. My wife and I, both avid participants of CrossFit, were browsing the Facebook pages of some of the local gyms in Colorado Springs and brainstorming which ones we might want to join if we moved there. Scrolling down through the pictures of a recent competition hosted at CrossFit SoCo, I came across a few shots of a bearded competitor who was obviously in good shape. He had tattoos, looked a little rough around the edges, and most noticeably, he was wearing a pink and white shirt that was at least two sizes too small with the word "unaffiliated" scribbled in black marker on the front of it. I couldn't help but laugh out loud and remarked to my wife, "There is no way this guy isn't former SOF. Hell, I bet he used to be a Ranger." I shared the picture, thinking it was hilarious and that the world needed to know about this man. About a day later, a friend of mine, Yasin Donov of 3rd Ranger Battalion fame, commented that he was actually his roommate and, yes, he was a Ranger. I guess we can always tell our own. It wasn't much later when Leo and I connected via Facebook, me asking if he would write something for a book I was working on, and would he agree to be sponsored by my brand new company, Blackside Concepts. He, of course, agreed, and that was the beginning of what would become a great friendship and business partnership that would see us traveling the globe less than 2 years later. Little did I know back then that at that very competition, he was struggling. Not athletically, but beneath the beard and tattoos. He was a fellow Ranger buddy who was still in the midst of a transition from military service that I had yet to even begin at the time. Isn't that how it always works out, though? We never seem to know our fellow brothers and sisters in arms are struggling. At least 22 times a day we don't find out until it is too late. We don't try to understand until it's too late. What I also didn't know back then is that Leo Jenkins would become an agent of change. Someone who would go on to champion veterans' transitions issues, to spread awareness, and even talk good men out of very bad situations. Little did I know that he would abandon a beachfront paradise in Costa Rica to become a homeless transient in the hopes of contributing to the cause. Little did I know he would tear open the scabs on his internal wounds to write, possibly, the most important book ever written on veterans and their transition from the military to civilian life. With less than 0.5% of the total population serving at any given time, there is a large gap in understanding the challenges our warrior elite face. For the 88% of America, and increasing, who have never put on a uniform, our challenges are largely out of sight and out of mind. Every time a tragedy or security situation arises somewhere in the world, America cries out for someone to do something. That someone is usually the American service member, and that something usually involves them going into harm's way and doing things few others can or will do. Yet very little thought is ever given to how we help those same service members come back home. This book shows exactly what one can and oftentimes does endure in an attempt to help themselves in that process. This book gives you the inside look at exactly what happens after someone does something and then has to attempt a return to normal. As you listen through this book, I beg that you not hear the words with pity for Leo. His story is certainly compelling, and at times you may be angered or saddened by the situations he has found himself in. I beg that you not hear this with pity for veterans as a whole either. Pity is not what we need. What we need is to be seen as people who are not so different than most of the rest of America, but with different experiences. Some of us went to basic training instead of freshman orientation after high school. Some of us went to an officer candidate board instead of an internship interview after college. Some of us endured combat deployments instead of semesters abroad. Certainly they are different experiences and different paths. But one demographic has to deal with the stigma of PTSD when interviewing for a job, whether they have it or not. They have to water down their resume in the hopes that the HR manager will understand it. What do we need? To be seen as equals and given a fair shake. For those who need help or rehabilitation to be given what they were promised would be there for them. America wants us to leave the military and seamlessly assimilate back into society as if that part of our life never happened. They don't want to hear about the son who asks you if his father is dead. They don't want to hear about how you told him his daddy was fine and please be quiet, even though minutes prior you stepped over the fragments of his father's skull and the contents it once protected. They don't want to hear about how we sat in plywood boxes, sweating through our uniform for a 10-minute call with our loved ones. A 10-minute call that would conclude with an obligatory, "I love you, talk to you soon," even though we knew the latter was a potential lie. What I would ask is that you give this book to someone who doesn't know any veterans, who is consumed by their first world problems, problems afforded to them on behalf of generation after generation of an ever-shrinking warrior class, and ask them to meet us halfway. Try to understand our background and our veteran community as much as we try to return to normal, despite all the challenges some of us face when trying to do so. Marty Scoveland, Jr., CEO, Blackside Concepts. Author's Preface. I'm going to be honest with you because I feel like you deserve that. I am not an author. I am not an academic. I don't have a wall full of degrees that make me a subject matter expert in the sociology of assimilation. I have attempted to write a flowery introduction to this book several times. Each version more flush with $6 words than the one before it. Each one further removed from the point and increasingly pompous in its own right. That, however, is not who I am. At 20 years old, blinded by a cloud of animosity created by the falling rubble of the attack on the World Trade Center, I enlisted in the U.S. Army as a medic. I would go on to graduate the U.S. Special Operations Medical Course, SOMC, and operate as a member of 3rd Ranger Battalion through multiple combat deployments in support of America's role in the global war on terrorism. The combat experiences that have led to the following book have been recorded in my first book, Lest We Forget, A Ranger Medic's Story. What follows is an account of the tribulations associated with leaving the military and attempting to reintegrate myself back into society. In my search for insight on the subject, I discovered that the overwhelming majority of books written on related topics have been composed by people with a PhD in psychology who have never been in the military, let alone deployed to combat. While I appreciate the effort they have dedicated to bringing these issues to the forefront, I believe that they are lacking a certain amount of grit necessary to effectively tell the story. This book can be taken as a memoir, however, it is more intended to pose certain questions regarding the psychological effects of returning from war than it is to tell a story. It is my experience that the vast majority of veterans do not desire to reopen the scars that they incurred during war. Many will not discuss such vicissitude due to the emotional pain that accompanies recalling. Following the release of my first book, I was taken aback by the number of men who, upon reading it, passed it on to family members and friends, saying, "I know that I don't talk about what I went through, but this book comes pretty damn close to my experience, if you are curious." With that, my words were able to transcend to become theirs, and I was able to be a voice for those who had difficulty telling their story. To say that I was honored to be in such a position would be a grave understatement. First and foremost, my hope is that any veteran who has felt alone in their journey back into the civilian world will realize that they are the furthest thing from it, that the majority of service members leaving the military face similar perils and often feel secluded in the solitude of a crowded room. My second intention is to show how I could have better prepared for and approached this transition. I believe that finding meaningful employment is one of the most important aspects to making a successful transition from the military to the civilian sector. The training that members of the military obtain is often second to none, yet can be overlooked due to the way in which it is presented. It would be difficult to argue that our government is doing everything possible to assist our combat veterans in their assimilation. With over 20 veterans a day deciding to take their own life, a life that they once used to protect our nation, much more can be done. It has become apparent to me at this point that many of those tasked with easing this transition just do not understand it. I hope, with all of my heart, that the words that follow act as a window into a world that less than a half of a percent of our population actually lives in. However, the onus is not on the government alone. It is up to each and every one of us, veteran and civilian alike, to shoulder our share of the task. Just because I fought does not exclude me from the responsibility of helping others that have. This is not a textbook. I am not an educated man. I am a war fighter. This is real. This is a Ranger Medic's return from war. Introduction. In a coffee shop in North Denver, as the snow flurries swirl and dance and hang in the air, I reflect on my military service and the 7 years since that has brought me to this place. Not just my physical residence, but my mental state and the way in which I see the world and the people in it. I look to the happy couple that just walked in with a degree of antipathy. Why is that? They seem like nice people, but a part of me holds them in disdain. Maybe it isn't antipathy at all. Perhaps it is jealousy or envy that is coursing through my veins. I allow my mind to wonder what it would be like to be rid of the ghosts and guilt of two wars, a weight that neither in this pair could ever understand. I find myself clinging to a world that I have long since left. October 20th, 2006, a date that will forever be ingrained in my memory. 20 October 2006 was the day that I went from being an Army Ranger to being a veteran. Over 2,500 sunrises have come and gone since that day, nearly twice the number that came and went during my time as a soldier. Yet somehow there is still a feeling residing in me that identifies more with the clean-shaven, beret-wearing version of me. I can't let him go. He is the best version of me that I have ever known. Every one of those 2,500-plus days, I have attempted to reintegrate into our social fabric so that I may be accepted back into a society that does not understand my disposition. This is not solely my struggle. This is the plight of millions of veterans today who find themselves adrift to some degree. It is important not to confuse struggle with ineffectiveness, for these are the most capable individuals of our generation. Their struggle lay not in inability, but rather in being a minority who has supported a majority. Their struggle is the perceived underappreciation for a donation of their most fruitful years, a struggle for which the most well-adjusted veteran is underprepared. It is the greatest battle that most will never face, an ongoing endeavor to achieve an internal expectation, one put in place by an experience that few will ever know. Our process of rejoining the masses is currently our burden to bear. It is our greatest mission. It is our albatross. The last long walk of our enlistment is our assimilation, and an arduous one it is. Long hours, bad food, and inadequate pay are staples of military service. Being shot at and placed in situations where you are required to take the life of another human being are merely a part of the job description. Watching your nieces, nephews, sons, and daughters grow up in pictures from half a world away no doubt pulls on the heartstrings of the most battle-hardened soldier. I can say now, with utmost confidence, however, that the most difficult part of wearing that uniform is hanging it up. The process of assimilation is long and convoluted. The physical, mental, and emotional demands placed on most members of the military far exceed their civilian counterparts, yet for some reason the same professional courtesies do not typically extend to those who have donned camouflage. College-level courses, as well as professional certifications achieved in the military, seldom transfer to a civilian equivalent. This is not an attempt at glorifying military service or an effort to create an atmosphere of pity. Neither would be helpful to veterans. The military is a voluntary path, and although most people don't have a comprehensive understanding of what they will inevitably experience upon enlisting, it is a path that is chosen with free will. That does not, however, mean that the burdens of this profession should be shouldered solely by those in uniform. We all have a social responsibility to understand those who have sacrificed so much for our way of life. Your ideological ethos does not have to be in line with those who serve, but you absolutely have a social obligation to understand the trials and tribulations that they endured for your benefit. The days of, "I don't want to know what happens over there," and "hearing about it makes me feel uncomfortable," are over. The difficulty transitioning from the military world into civilian life is multifaceted. There is a very structured, systematic progression in taking a civilian and turning them into a soldier. Step by step, day after day, through the course of basic training, soldiers are taught how to conduct tasks in a very specific manner. They are not only taught the proper way of making their bed and shining their boots, they are held accountable by their peers and superiors alike if these tasks are not completed to standard. There is no equivalent to this upon discharge. Anyone that has ever attempted to quit anything cold turkey understands that it can often be an ineffective technique. A few hours of briefings and resume classes do not make up for months and years of institutionalized indoctrination. It isn't that a veteran doesn't know how to think for himself. The problem is that they have been a critical member of a team for years. They had a specific role to play, and when that role is so drastically altered, finding yourself can be difficult. Following release from the military, new veterans lose the most significant support group that they have ever known. The simple truth is that the only people who will ever understand the demons experienced in battle are the ones standing by your side when those demons made their grand entrance. There is no need to express to those men how you are feeling regarding those events, because they feel the same way. There is more comfort in that than you can possibly imagine. To go from being surrounded by a group of people who relate on the most intimate level to being isolated from every one of them overnight is a highly traumatic event that often isn't even recognized. This particular moment is disguised by the jubilee of being free from the perceived oppression of the military itself. That oppression, in hindsight, is actually the extension of the most caring extended family a person can know. As a soldier, in order to accomplish the required tasks of your profession, you must possess the highest degree of confidence. When returning to civilian life, the same confidence that has served to keep you alive in an austere environment is looked upon as an unnecessary arrogance. It is the service member who is forced to adapt to the outlook of the popular majority in this situation. This becomes an initial source of animosity. Why should the veteran be made to conform to the parts of society that sat back when there was work to do? One of the most fundamental and problematic aspects of assimilation for military veterans is quite simply a misunderstanding on the part of civilians, perpetrated by movies and television. Films featuring veterans seem to go one of two ways. They are either an emotionless, unfeeling death machine, or so completely broken by their experience that they are a danger to society. It is a sad, simple truth that the way the media depicts military life is largely inaccurate. Yet this, not reality, is how most civilians form their opinions of members of the armed services. We leave a world of black and white, wrongs and rights, to join a world of endless shades of gray, one where standing orders no longer dictate daily activities and people do not live by a creed. Morals are contorted to serve the individual rather than the greater good of the group. Many veterans step off a train upon leaving the military and set out on a journey with no designated path. That train that they grew accustomed to was perpetually on a very calculated route. Something as simple as, "Should I get a haircut today?" is a choice that was predetermined by a mandate. The following story attempts to portray those tribulations through my own personal experiences. This story depicts the journey of leaving the safe comforts of war and returning to the harsh realities of civilian society. From the conversations I have had with hundreds of other veterans, I have discovered that I was not the only one to experience these issues, deal with these fears, and dance with these demons. I learned that I am not alone. I had for years, however, been under the impression that such things should not impact a strong man. I watched men that I admire carry on with what seemed like indifference to the same events that at times crippled my mind, never knowing that they, too, were being strangled by the same monster. Chapter 1. A Departure. Ah! The suppressed guttural scream escaped my lungs. How long had I been holding that in? Years, I suppose. All of the stress and pressure of my job had been compiling itself on my shoulders for what felt like a lifetime, and now, just like that, it was gone. As I pulled away from the uninviting 8-foot-tall brown fence adorned with weathered barbed wire that separated 3rd Ranger Battalion from the rest of the world, a wave of unbridled, expansive freedom crashed over me. For several years, I was made to ask permission if I wanted to go anywhere. Forms had to be filled out, requesting endorsement for any type of travel. An ironic notion in and of itself, when you consider that one of the purposes of the U.S. service member is to maintain the ability of its nation's citizens to travel uninhibited, without restriction from government. Upon enlistment, a certain percentage of your rights are relinquished in an effort to secure those of the majority. It's a necessary evil, one that we all accept. Now, for the first time, I could go anywhere without asking permission from another human being. The choice was now mine to shave or not to shave, to sleep in or wake up early, The decision and subsequent destination of travel was mine to make. I had been responsible for the health and well-being of the Warriors of Charlie Company for years, treating small scrapes or gunshot wounds, maintaining shot records, or prescribing drugs. It was all my responsibility. Now I wasn't responsible for anything. Just like that, I was released from the willful obligation of taking care of my fellow Rangers, my best friends, my brothers. It was an uncommonly warm day for late October, as if the sun had come out to see me off. The sun seemed to be the only one who did. There was no party, no ceremony, and no fuss. To be honest, I preferred it that way. I have never liked saying goodbye. I have never had a problem leaving a place. Yet, for some reason, it felt as though I had cleaved a part of myself off and left it behind that brown fence. As much as it may seem like the military will cease in your absence, it somehow finds a way to go on without you. The day I left, Charlie Company was preparing for yet another long day of training. The mission goes on in your absence, regardless of how important your role was. I glanced at the tan beret staring back at me from the dash of my pickup truck. It was impossible to not reflect on all that I had sacrificed to obtain and keep that piece of headgear. On the first day of the selection process to become a Ranger, I vowed that I would rather die than go home without it. Every day for years, I fought to maintain the standards of my Ranger regiment so that it would not be taken from me. It was a symbol that told a story of generations of honorable men. It was as respected as it was coveted among those in uniform. Accelerating off of Fort Benning and into the unknown of what the future held, I knew I would never again don that beret in an official capacity. It simultaneously filled me with the excitement of future possibility and broke my heart. I was the first one home that day. I shared a house off of Exit 6 with Nicky P., Morty, and Graves, all fellow Rangers from Charlie Company. My good friend Matt Vall had recently been honorably discharged from the Ranger Regiment and moved out of the large house that we all lived in and headed back to the Midwest. We had spent our early 20s together, not even knowing how unique the bond that we had created was. With the force of a wrecking ball, my dog Jameson smashed into my leg as I entered the front door. The little brown pit mix was still in her awkward puppy phase. Just a few months before, the house felt so empty. On one of my last missions in Iraq, I tore a hole in my abdominal wall and had to return to the U.S. for surgery. Maybe it was the hot summer nights in Georgia, or maybe it was knowing that the men that I loved were still deployed while I was safe, but either way, I wasn't sleeping much in those days. Conducting multiple direct action raids on different high-value targets in a single evening was routine during my final deployment. Several members of our platoon felt the sting of a suicide bomber from a range that should have vaporized their existence into little more than pink mist. Bullets from a PKM machine gun ruined the helmet of one of our fireteam members. Helicopter crashes sent men into rescue mode and firefights that illuminated the hot, vast Mesopotamian night with green beams of infrared light emitted from the PEQ-2 lasers affixed to our M4 assault rifles were a regular occurrence. It was the kind of deployment that most Rangers dream about, non-stop action that tested the skills we had spent years refining. Roughly 100 direct action missions in 90 days, at the end of which every member from our task force returned home to their families. A statistic that the enemy could not boast, as our platoon alone was responsible for the eradication of dozens of known bomb makers, foreign fighters, and jihadists in that time span. It becomes easy to accept that you may lose your life during those times, so much so that about 2 months into that deployment, I actually wrote my own eulogy. 30 years old seemed as far away to me as 130 does to most people. I had come to terms with the fact that I would not see my third decade of life. What I could not so easily accept was the loss of a brother. My primary purpose as a ranger medic was to ensure the return.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?